thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Police and family members pay tribute to slain officer Enrique Martinez. New faces are coming soon to Chicago's Board of Education. We meet a few of them and talk about their vision for Chicago Public Schools.
This is crucial. This is something that we need.
Advocates are warning their after-school programs are at risk of losing funding. And artist, engineer, philosopher Leonardo da Vinci did a bit of everything. A new documentary explores the life and work of the 15th century polymath. And now to some of today's top stories. A growing number of officials are pushing back on proposed cuts to the Chicago Police Department's budget. They warned the cuts would limit the department's already slow consent decree process. Among the concerned are former Chicago Inspector General Joe Ferguson, Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability President Anthony Driver, and former Constitutional Policing and Reform Director for the City of Chicago, Robert Boyk. They, along with the other names that you see here on your screen, have signed a letter echoing what Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul has told the mayor, that the city's proposed 2025 budget would cut 456 vacant, sworn, but mostly civilian police positions directly responsible for consent decree reforms. The drama between The Onion and conspiracy theorist Alex Jones just got even more layered. Today, a company affiliated with Jones asked a federal judge to disqualify the satirical site's winning bid to buy InfoWars, the site formerly belonging to Jones. The company, First United American Companies, and the only other bidder, is alleging fraud and collusion between the bankruptcy trustee, The Onion, and the families of Sandy Hook victims. The bankruptcy auction is part of the liquidation of Jones's assets. Proceeds will go to Sandy Hook families after a defamation lawsuit brought by the families. For more on this story, you can check out tomorrow's program when we will be joined by The Onion's executive director. Northwestern Wildcats fans are getting their first look at the future home for the Big Ten football team. The Ryan family and the university released this video showing renderings of the $850 million sports and entertainment complex funded entirely by the Ryan family. They say the 35,000-seat venue will have better-than-TV sightlines for spectators, along with a seating canopy, 194% of the seating required by the Americans with Disabilities Act, and more than 200,000 square feet of parks and plazas around the stadium. It's slated to open in 2026. Becoming a police officer was a calling for Officer Enrique Martinez, who was laid to rest today by hundreds of other officers, friends, and family, including Martinez's brother, who is also on the Chicago Police Force.
We realized it wasn't just a job, it was our calling. To serve the disadvantaged and to protect the forgotten, we wanted to live the life of a hero. Becoming police officers was not just a job title to us, but who we were supposed to be.
Mourners gathered for the funeral at St. Rita of Kaskia Shrine Chapel in Ashburn to remember the 26-year-old only on the force for 3 years. Speakers included Superintendent Larry Snelling, among other officers. Mayor Brandon Johnson originally planned to attend, but did not after a request from the family. Martinez was killed during a November 4th traffic stop. Police have charged a suspect with his murder. Up next, we hear from members of Chicago's first elected school board right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The Chicago Board of Education is in the midst of massive change. Residents just voted in the city's first elected school board. The election follows the last board's en masse resignation and current public clashes between the district, Chicago Teachers Union, and the mayor. Here with what's on their agenda are newly elected board members, G2 Brown, who won the 5th district on the city's west side, Angel Gutierrez, who won the 8th District on the city's south and southwest sides, and Che Reinfest-Smith, who won the 10th District on the city's south side. Welcome back, gentlemen, and congrats to all of you on winning your races.
Thank you.
G2 Brown, let's start with you, please. You have advocated for an elected school board for a very long time. How does it feel to not only be here, but also to have been elected as a member of the first board?
Yes, ma'am. It's an honor to be in this moment, remembering that often having to protest at the Chicago Board of Education and pitch tents in front of the Chicago Board of Education to make sure that the voices of our community was heard. I'm overwhelmed by the fact that there was a process that allowed the people to determine who would actually make education policy for the children of Chicago.
Angel Gutierrez, how do you think an elected school board will perform differently from previous appointed boards?
I mean, just that, right? We were elected by the people, and part of that is to do the people's work. Mm-hmm. And I often say that when I think of the 10 members who were elected, right, we all have much more in common than we don't, right? And and I think that we're all in this because we're trying to do what's best for our students, making sure that our students have the dollars that they need in the classroom so they can perform ultimately to be successful.
Che Smith, what do you anticipate the board's relationship will be like with City Hall?
Oh, I think the board, I know the board's relationship will be great with City Hall because this board is so diverse. This board is so wide ranging with artists, with business people, with educators, that we're going to bring a budget that City Hall is going to say, wow, this is what elected representation does, not just selected representation.
What do you make of the mayor appointing a new board just weeks before this election?
Well, that's the mayor's privilege to do that. And every mayor before this mayor has appointed a board. When the elected board comes along, I have no doubt that we're going to all be able to say bring together what the constituents want. So we talk a lot about the mayor and the appointed board. The opportunity in this elected board is that now the constituents get to speak. And I have no doubt that every board member is going to be listening to the people. This is a hybrid board. In 2 years, it's going to be a fully elected board. And I think every board member is now looking to community from where to get our marching orders.
All right. G2, coming back to you, what are some of your major concerns for the district? What are your priorities going forward?
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest issues in Chicago public schools is that Chicago, you know, we don't have failing schools, but as a public, we've been failed. Mm-hmm. The school district is deeply inequitable, and that has been accepted as sort of that's just how it is. But I know through my lived experience that all children, including children on the south and west sides, are beautiful. They're visionary. They're brilliant. And we have to have an environment that supports that. So my number one issue will be equity. Now, equity is not a benevolent act. Equity comes with decision-making authority. So I, as Che said, I'm excited about expanding sustainable community schools. That basically means working with the community to build a vision for what schools should look like. Imagine a world-class pre-K through 12th grade system of education in every neighborhood. Like, I'm excited about the possibilities of that. I'm excited about listening to parents and gathering community wisdom and partnering that with academic expertise. And finally, we will actually have a board of education that does not do the bidding of corporations, but does the bidding of the people in our communities.
Okay, so equity, and we know that you've always been a supporter of community, sustainable community schools. Mm-hmm. Angel Gutierrez, you were supported and endorsed by the Illinois Network of Charter Schools. What are your priorities and concerns for the district?
So, I mean, one, we have a major deficit, right? That could potentially be looking at $1 billion at the end of next year. And we as an elected school board are going to have to tackle that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's structural, right? Mm-hmm. It's been around for now, but now we have been elected by the people to actually address that issue. Right. And I think it means that, you know, looking at everything that we're doing, you know, how is it that we can put the maximum amount of dollars back into the classroom that we currently know is not happening, right? Mm-hmm. That's one. And then I think the other piece is that we've seen some little bit of dysfunction, I think, on the board side. And so there's been really no governance, no real structure per se, right? Kind of, you know, oh, we decide we're going to have a special meeting today, and he gets called, I didn't get called, right? And it becomes a problem, right? Because that's what happens versus there's a rubric of order of if every Thursday we're going to have an agenda review meeting, let's have the agenda review meeting. Let's not cancel it and then go into a meeting with a different agenda and stuff.
So budgeting, board organization, it sounds like are important to you. Yeah. Rhymefest, we know that you're an artist, right?
Yes.
You come from an arts background. What are your major concerns and priorities for CBS?
You know, you just talked about later how you're going to be doing a story on Da Vinci, who was an artist, an engineer, an author. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that every student in the city of Chicago has the opportunity to express their Da Vinci. And that means it's not just STEM, it's STEAM. That means we're going to do cross-curriculum. Our students should be learning aviation. Our students should be doing it through art. Trigonometry is not hard when you're doing angles, and it's art and it's math together. So these are things that I want to make sure that our principals know that they're being listened to. They're the visionary leaders of the school. I want to make sure that our teachers feel cared for and that our students know that whatever their passion is, there's a school for them.
I want to thank you for teasing our Da Vinci segment that's coming up in just a bit. Good job. Of course, then there's been the contention between City Hall and leadership at CPS and Mayor Johnson having called for Pedro Martinez's resignation. G2, do you think that was called for? And what questions do you have before the board comes together and has to decide whether he stays or goes?
Well, I don't know Mr. Martinez, and I think a good board member, what you do is when you take office, you do an assessment. And that's what I'm prepared to do, to really just kind of understand what's happening at CPS, what are the goals and objectives, are they being met, are they not, and then, you know, I can make a decision from there.
Then there's the relationship with CTU. Angel, how do you plan on approaching that and the contract that is currently being negotiated?
Yeah, I think we have to look at it, right? I think that our teachers should be paid fairly. But I think that there are some things in that contract that kind of go beyond the scope of teaching. And I think if we can take those things out and put the focus back onto teaching and in things that happen in the classroom, that we can kind of find some common ground there to get that done.
Trey, 10 seconds left. What's next?
Yeah, you know, the board, as you can see, you got a CTU member, you have a charter member, you have an independent member, but we all agree whatever's best for kids is what we're going to do first.
All right. Spoken like a bunch of people who just ran for office. Congrats.
Very quick, but because I come from I want to be clear, respectfully.
CTU advocate, not a member.
Yeah, but I come from the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, so the oldest black-led grassroots organization in the city of Chicago. That's who prepared me.
And so, new member of the newly elected Board of Education. I hate to cut you off, but we do have to go. We will have you back because you've got work to do.
Yes, ma'am.
Our thanks to G2 Brown, Angel Gutierrez, and Shay Rhymefest-Smith. Thanks, everybody. Congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Up next, Joanna Hernandez and the fight to keep after-school programs operating.
Organizations providing after-school programs for students are sounding the alarm, saying there's a statewide funding crisis. Illinois lawmakers approved $50 million for after-school and summer programs, but advocates say that funding hasn't reached schools yet. This delay leaves Chicago public schools and local organizations facing difficult cuts.
The Zoom meeting that we had at that time, it was doing programming.
Yes. Elizabeth Childs is a program manager for an after-school program at Haley Academy Elementary School, operated in partnership with the YMCA.
Having this program opens the door so parents know that their child have a safe haven to go to, somewhere where they're supervised, they're getting help with homework,
Now the after-school program is in jeopardy of losing funding.
Much of after-school and community schoolwork is grant-based, and the downside to being grant-based is that grants come to an end.
Many organizations are now facing challenges due to Chicago Public Schools funding cuts, expiring federal grants, and COVID relief dollars drying up. Last year, Illinois lawmakers approved $50 million in new funding for after-school programming, but those funds have yet to be distributed. Eric Wirt, who oversees community programming for the YMCA, says this funding was intended to help stabilize after-school programs throughout the state.
It shouldn't be that every year certain programs are facing the end. And so when the $50 million was passed, we were incredibly excited because we looked at it as a game changer.
Keep the lights on! Save after school!
According to advocates, more than 13,000 students have already lost after school programming. Susan Stanton, the director of Act Now Illinois, a coalition advocating for youth programming, says that number is likely to rise if funding doesn't improve.
A lot of programs were really hoping that there would be at least the opportunity to compete for more funding by the new year. And at this point, given that we're already in November, that doesn't feel as likely. And so we're expecting another huge kind of portion of closures and layoffs as we get into kind of the holiday season.
Jobs right now, like they say they're hiring and they don't hire. So
Chicago Debates is also experiencing the effects of funding cuts.
The commitment from CPS makes up about a third of our annual budget. So, I mean, we're a small organization, so you lose a small chunk of that, and that makes a big difference in what you can do.
The organization has collaborated with CPS schools across the city since 1997, introducing students to the art of debate. Due to funding cuts, it has reduced its outreach from 104 schools to 70 schools.
Schools now have to pay for their own transportation, right, to get to the tournaments. They have to pay for their own supplies. Because of that reality, some schools are saying we just don't have the budget to do that.
What about you guys? What do you guys think?
Sharon Mitchell, an alumnus for the debate program at Morgan Park High School, is now the Cook County Public Defender. He says the program opened doors for him.
This program's been serving the community, serving our community for so long, and not just like the folks with the most, right? You're talking about 80% Title I schools, right? You're talking about lots of black and brown kids that may have not gotten that opportunity. It's just a special program.
As funding dwindles, programs like Chicago Debates and the YMCA seek alternative solutions to keep their initiatives running. Programs that Mother Elizabeth Child says play a crucial role in supporting underserved communities.
When I told the parents they might not have this program anymore, they like, you all are lifesavers. You all create stability.
And the Illinois State Board of Education is tasked with establishing a distribution system for the funds. Although the board was unable to provide a specific timeline for the rollout of this system, they indicated they are working with the General Assembly on how to proceed. The board also says they've released other funding opportunities that will be available for the upcoming year. Brandis, back to you.
Artist, scientist, engineer, and philosopher. Titles which only scratch the surface of what 15th century Italian Leonardo da Vinci achieved. A new two-part PBS documentary series from Ken Burns, Sarah Burns, and David McMahon dissects da Vinci's life in an effort to make sense of his work and the impact he has to this day. Here's a look.
He filled his notebooks with calculations and questions, theories and innovations, revealing a mind of infinite curiosity. In an age of astonishing artistic advances and a newfound reverence for humanity, Leonardo da Vinci made his way, he said, as a discepolo dell'esperienza, a disciple of experience.
And joining us now with more is one of the film's directors and producers, David McMahon. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Brandis.
So this is the first time a Ken Burns film has focused on a non-American subject. Why da Vinci? Why now?
Well, Walter Isaacson, the biographer, suggested the project to us. He was working on a big biography of Leonardo, and he said, this is a really compelling subject, and I think you should take it on as a documentary. And at first, it didn't seem obvious because we generally have not taken on any subjects from overseas. But in this case, it felt really compelling. For one, Leonardo da Vinci was born at a time when there wouldn't have been any archival footage or film, and so it would present a challenge to us. How are we going to tell a story about this Renaissance painter without the sort of material we're accustomed to using? We also quickly understood how little we knew about him, and he became enormously compelling, and it felt like we had an opportunity to sort of deepen people's understanding of who he was.
He's a bit of an enigma, a mystery. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he lived 500 years ago, and at the end of his life, he wasn't a very public figure, and people couldn't really know him that well at that time. So his legacy kind of builds over the centuries, and he was into so many different things, science, art, math, geometry, and so we're looking for any little tidbits that we can that tell us more about who he is. And I think when we find one, people take some license and they run with it. And so there's also this thing about him, he feels a little bit like a wizard. He has kind of a Gandalf type feel about him. He's got the big long beard, and it feels like there's something magical about him. And so our hope was to kind of rip the beard off him and see who the man actually was.
He also had, like, you know, sort of his drawings, they looked like gadgets at the time, and the inventions that he sort of experimented with.
Yes, and I think a lot of those drawings, a lot of those innovations were really only ever on the page, and he didn't create a lot of them, but a lot of those things, there are many unprecedented aspects to them, right? And so for him to come up with a lot of those things, he had to have a profound imagination. So what's really interesting to me is where his deep curiosity about the world and everything that he's observing meets that imagination.
He's known for being ahead of his time. Do we think, you know, we have been taking his work for granted all this time? I mean, you think about, like, his most famous work, right? Mona Lisa.
Yeah, I think that we can be distracted by Mona Lisa and The Last Supper, and they're really profound. And, you know, in an age of Instagram where you might go stand before that painting and take a picture and blast that out and show you that it was there, that you might miss the opportunity to really understand who Mona Lisa, what the painting actually means. And so he is a man of his time. And in that painting, I think it captures that at that time you would have, if you were in a bottega learning how to paint, you would have also studied geometry. You would have observed nature. You would have studied anatomy and physiology. And if you look closely at that painting, you can see all of that being poured into it, whether it's the smile and all the muscles that he understands are activated in the smile, or the backdrop and the really profoundly beautiful natural scenery behind there that he paints with an understanding of all the laws of nature.
For you all, for the filmmakers, how does this film look and feel different from your previous works?
Well, we decided that what we wanted to do for the audience was really get people between his ears. And so we're using those notebooks to tell the story and to sort of guide our hand. And what you find in the notebooks is that he really blurs the lines between things like science and nature. And so what we wanted to do was show, to blur those lines ourselves. So what we did was split the screen and show pictures that he would have drawn, along with natural cinematography of the natural world that he would have observed. And then if it's an innovation, maybe in a third box, we're showing some footage from the 20th century that captures something that feels a little bit like what it was he was designing on the page. And we are hoping that that will help our audience see the way that he was observing the world and the way that he was thinking.
One of the unique things about Da Vinci was that he was left-handed. Mm. And the way he wrote, it was sort of backwards, which is fascinating. Tell me a little bit about that and what else that's, you know, sort of fascinating that you learned about this man.
Yeah, he writes in a mirror script. He was left-handed. And I think really that was that paper is expensive, ink is expensive. And what he's writing, he imagines publishing one day. And so I think really he's trying in that mirror script not to smudge the ink. And that's really maybe what that was all about. But it does take a profound mind, I think, to be able to do that reversal. But I also think what it tells us is that we want to ascribe to that like something magical and fantastical. And even to this day, we have a deep interest in him because we think that everything he did is profound and has a certain magic. And so you get lots of representations of Leonardo in the world, and a lot of them feel like he's mysterious and shrouded in mystery. But I think what we're trying to do is get a little closer to the man, a man who was interested in science, interested in art, interested in applying everything he observed to all that he was working on.
Much of his work was also unfinished. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
Well, you know, there are lots of questions. You know, what if Leonardo had finished everything? Would we have many more works? I think that we focus on the paintings, and there are only maybe 15 or 17 of them that we know for sure have Leonardo's authorship, either all or in part. And so it feels like all of the art, everything that he was doing was an experiment. And when he found out what he was going to find out, he moved on to something else. So if he was trying to understand atmospheric perspective in a painting, he would go into the mountains, observe the mountains, make notes about the weather, and then make his painting. Maybe when he found out what it is he wanted to, he moved on before he finished the painting, and he seemed to be okay with that.
A few seconds left. I know you've just completed this, but what is next for you and the team?
Our next project, and we already are underway with it, is a kind of sequel to Ken's Civil War film. It's one that he's been wanting to make for 40 years, and we're calling it Emancipation to Exodus, and it's about the black experience between emancipation and the Great Migration. So it's really about Reconstruction, which we see as maybe the most misunderstood period of our history.
I cannot wait to have you back on to talk about that. David McMahon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brandis.
And part one of the documentary airs tonight at 7, with part two airing tomorrow night at 7. And we're back right after this. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and a special time, 11 o'clock. Our Spotlight Politics team with the latest pushback on proposed budget cuts to police reform efforts. And the executive editor of The Onion tells us why acquiring Alex Jones's InfoWars is more than just funny business. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.